boots on the moon. That's the stated goal of the dedicated men and women of the United States Space Force. And we're going to chat about it on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, helping clients throughout the Central New York community create their own unique outdoor living space for 37 years. Services and project galleries found at hunterspringslandscape.com.
Space Force, the new comedy series starring Steve Carell, recently hit the small screens, courtesy of Netflix. It's a workplace comedy series that centers on a group of people led by General Mark Naird, played by Steve Carell, tasked with establishing the United States Space Force, the sixth branch of the United States Armed Forces. Here with me to discuss the show and contrast and compare it with the actual Space Warfare Service branch of the U.S. Armed Forces is a man who knows a little something about the U.S. military. It's Aerospace Industries Association President and CEO Eric Fanning. Throughout his decorated career, Mr. Fanning served as the Secretary of the Army, Chief of Staff to the Secretary of Defense, and oversaw the Air Force Space Command as Acting Secretary and Undersecretary of the Air Force during the Obama administration. Eric, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Did I get all that right to some degree?
You did, actually, and not many people do, so congratulations.
So, look, why don't we get started by you telling us a little bit about Aerospace Industries Association. What's the mission?
Sure. We represent companies large and small in the space, civil aviation, and defense industries. And so we bring them together to create a common voice and set of priorities for which we advocate to the federal government, both Congress and the executive branch.
Okay. So with your given your history, you know your way around the Pentagon a little bit. So we want to talk a little bit about Space Force and where it might be hitting the mark, where it might be missing the mark. One of the things that I think we need to have in order to have a successful parity is some frame of reference. And I'm wondering if there is enough known by the general public of the armed forces outside of, you know, we when we see military movies, it's either, you know, movies on the war field or if it's a comedy, it's generally around something like boot camp, things that we're familiar with. In terms of doing a parody around the inner workings, do you think there's enough of a knowledge base by the general public to make a show like this successful?
I think so. I mean, I've long been concerned about the growing divide between those who serve and those who are protected. You know, we're well over 40 years into an all-volunteer force. We have the most professional force we've ever had, but fewer people serve. Fewer people know people who've served. There is less of a connection now than there perhaps has ever been in the country. But there, I think, are enough portrayals on television and movies, enough information in the media that gives some context to it. But, you know, it's interesting you asked this question first, because the very first scene when Carell is being made a four-star general, they have the SecDef say, "You are the newest four-star general in the Air Force, the highest rank you can attain." Anybody who knows anything about the military at all would know that, would need to be told that. So clearly the writers are trying to add context in here and there.
That's a good point. That's a great point. Now, in terms of your career and all that you've done in the military, you're actually not a military. You're not military personnel. You were a civilian part of the military, right?
That's true. We have civilian control of the military. It's a part of the Constitution, a timely topic with everything that's going on in the country right now. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions or misunderstandings that the general public has, and in fact was also a part of the very first scene of the first episode of Space Force. The Secretary of Defense says to Steve Carell's character, you report only to the SecDef and the President. They took service secretaries out of the show entirely, which probably doesn't make a big difference for the show or the people watching it, but it does for someone who's a former service secretary. But yes, the boss, so to speak, of a chief when that chief is in the context of running the service, is the service secretary, Army, Navy, Air Force.
Right.
When the chief is serving with a second hat as a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that does go up to the secretary and to the president.
Okay.
So service chiefs are dual-hatted.
Okay. So, and that's true on a lot of levels here, because, and I think that's where we have a good chance of getting some good comedy out of this, when we are mixing some of the civilian scientists working alongside sort of veteran and grizzled military personnel. We see that in one of the interaction between two of the main characters. So we have Steve Carell's General Mark Naird, and I'm going to get your opinion on who Mark Naird is. That interaction with John Malkovich's Dr. Adrian Mallory, I think, is where the true gold for this show can be. Adrian Mallory is sort of, even though there are many comedic moments with him, he's sort of the straight guy in a world of crazy. Is that the way you see this?
I do. That was my favorite character to watch in the episodes that I watched. And I do think that they're able to bring in, actually, ironically, through that character, they bring in more of what the Space Force actually is versus the things that Steve Carell is focused on. Probably the biggest thing that they changed in that series is what the fictional Space Force focuses on. Most of that stuff, certainly getting boots on the moon, is the job of NASA. And they have conflated, you know, commercial space, civil space, which is NASA, and national security space into the series there. And so I like Malkovich's character can bring in some of the more technical scientific things that Space Force is actually focused on.
Yeah, let's take a listen to a little bit of Dr. Mallory before a congressional hearing talking about the purpose of Space Force.
Dr. Adrian Mallory, Chief Scientist, Space Force. If you want specifics, we are developing a new climate satellite that will provide such precise forecasts that the advance warning times for tornadoes and hurricanes will be tripled, potentially saving tens of thousands of American lives and hundreds of billions of American dollars in disaster relief.
I'm trying to put boots on the moon. Boots on the moon. A laser sword is a child's toy.
It's a lightsaber. Did you hear yourself? Laser sword?
So there's a contrast between sort of the two visions of the military and the civilian part of this project. How close is Dr. Mallory's vision to what the purpose of Space Force is supposed to be, the actual agency?
So as I recall in that scene, he says there are adversaries in space that could hold that satellite at risk.
Right.
That is Space Force. We, as the United States, develop these satellites. That's a function of NOAA under the Department of Commerce. But one of Space Force's charges is to protect our assets up there. Certainly, there are critical military assets up there, nuclear command and control, communications, surveillance. But increasingly, and completely in some ways, we as civilians on the ground are dependent on things that are up there. Just think if we didn't have GPS anymore. So Space Force's role is not to put people in uniform into space, but to protect the assets we have up there, both military and civilian.
Now, were you around when the, I don't know if I want to call it concept, the vision for Space Force was started until its launch?
So when I was in the Pentagon, and I was in the Bill Clinton Pentagon as well, so I've been around this a long time, they were talking about, there were advocates for creating a new branch of the military. It wasn't necessarily fleshed out to be, a new military department versus a military force. All those details came later, but it definitely picked up steam very quickly under this administration because President Trump advocated or endorsed it very early on. And there was enough support on the Hill to make it happen.
And of course, the one memorable thing of this, at least on the internet and on social media, is the ribbing of the actual logo for Space Force, that it closely resembles that of Star Trek, which I personally don't mind because I'm a huge Star Trek fan. So this vision of what we might be, say, 100 or 200 years from now, based on what we do now, it sits well with me. I kind of dig that stuff. You've been in obviously been in the Pentagon. Have you been in a Joint Chiefs meeting?
I have not. They usually don't have the civilians in those. Okay. It's just the Secretary of Defense. Because if you're working in one of the military departments, which I did most of the Obama administration, you're not involved with the Joint Chiefs part of the Pentagon. The job of a service secretary in the military department is to recruit, train, and equip. Then the chiefs advise on the use of those forces that are produced by the military department.
So in the show, in the Joint Chiefs meetings, they portray it as a bit of a pissing contest. I guess each head of the military trying to prove their worth or sort of better positioned or worth more than their counterparts. Does that sound like close to reality from what you hear about those kinds of meetings?
Well, you see it all the time among the civilians as well. I'd say it's more respectful than in a comedy show, but I think everyone is parochial. But at first, you sort of approach a problem, you know, what can my service do? What can the forces under my command do? But you quickly find yourself thinking jointly, which is the whole purpose of that that body, the Joint Chiefs. And I've seen it time and time and time again where they will defend their service. They will think in terms of what their service can do because that's what they know best. But they do come together as a unified military to figure out solutions.
Right, right. And I think this show is trying to have some fun, but obviously we know the seriousness and serious nature of our armed forces. With regard to what the show is trying to accomplish with its parody, what do you think what statement is the show and its writers and producers are trying to make?
I haven't made it all the way through. And my sense is it was just a really easy target. I'm sure starting to think through it, it's just rich with things you can do because you have all of that history and tradition of the military and yet something entirely brand new. And so you have a lot of latitude to do what you want to do. And there are a lot of things in that show that don't resemble reality at all. For example, you talk about the Joint Chiefs meeting. The Coast Guard is not, the Commandant of the Coast Guard is not a member of the Joint Chiefs. But the head of the National Guard Bureau is. But obviously, that was a really funny element that they added into the series.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that I've stumbled upon the larger message yet. Okay. I think that this just looked like a target-rich environment for the writers.
So where do you think the comedy gold is from what you know about the military and its organization and how it operates and functions? Where do you think they can mine the most comedy material?
So I think there's two elements, and I think that they've already tapped into it. One is the relationship between Steve Carell's character, the new head of Space Force, the first head of Space Force, and the chief of staff of the Air Force. Because, you know, the Air Force was created in 1947 and came out of the Army. It was the Army Air Corps. And the Army, to this day, the chief of staff of the Army, others will make jokes about the Air Force having been a part of the Army, and that's, 60, 70 years later. So I think that relationship you see between those two chiefs, especially since one had worked for the other, creates funny moments. And then the interaction between the uniform side and the civilian side, the only political appointee that they have in there is the Secretary of Defense, who's a funny character as well. But I think what you pointed out earlier, that interplay between the scientist and the general creates a lot of humor and taps into a lot of things that actually do exist in that civil-military relationship.
Yeah, the relationship you spoke about is between the counterparts between General Mark Naird, played by Steve Carell, and then there's General Kick Grabiston, Chief of Staff for the Air Force, played by Noah Emmerich, who famously played in The Americans, which was an outstanding series I enjoyed. Those two are constantly butting heads because I believe Kick would like for all of this stuff to report to him. So the ribbing doesn't just sit with the military. There's also some parodies going on with folks in public service that we know. There is someone who is a representative of Nancy Pelosi. There is someone who is a representative of Chuck Schumer. And then there is a character played by Ginger Gonzaga, who plays a parody of AOC. On the show, they call her AYC, Annabella Ysidro Campos. So there are some parodies of public figures in our politics, I think, that lend and have a great opportunity for really good comedy down the road with this show.
Yeah, I it's a parody, obviously, and so you simplify things. I mean, you see it in the Joint Chiefs are portrayed. You know, they bring in the sort of farcical notion of what the Marine Corps is, what the Army is, what the Navy is, and you certainly see it in those members of Congress too.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes was watching the launch of a spacecraft. The spacecraft is going up. There's rattling in the office, and then there's a shot of a whiskey cart with one of my favorite whiskeys, the Balvenie. Is that happening in our military? Are we looking like madmen? Do we still have bars in the office? Because I think that's something I'd like to get in my office.
Yeah, no, we do not. Okay. that ended a long time ago. Even in the Pentagon, I think if you want to bring alcohol into the Pentagon for an event or something, you need to get permission of a service secretary, the Secretary of Defense. I mean, they have changed that a lot in the military. I noticed that too and had to laugh about it. Because you would definitely not see that in a service chief's office.
Look, so bottom line this thing for me. The show is getting killed by the critics, but it's number one right now on Netflix. How do you see it, the show? Who do you think General Mark Naird is, and do you think this show has a chance at being successful?
So I'm not a critic. I'm just a viewer, and I was very excited for it because of what it was focused on, because of who was behind it. I think Steve Carell is hysterical, and the other actors in the cast I think are funny as well. But I stopped at episode four. I watched enough so that I could be thoughtful when speaking with you, but I didn't find it that funny. I'm not surprised at all that so many people are watching it and tuning into it. A, we're all looking for things to watch because we're home all the time. Mm-hmm. And B, again, the actors, the creators, and the subject matter. But that also means that there were high expectations, I suppose, for it, which can be difficult.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. There's something with the comedic timing. There's something with the Mark Naird character that seems to be sort of overplayed by Steve Carell. I didn't find it funny until episode three. And that's when I got, you know, a chance to count several chuckles on one hand. And so I'm hoping it's the kind of thing that is going to build some momentum as it goes on through the season. But you run the risk of having people tune out in one or two if you don't hit those notes right off the bat. So there are some funny folks in here. I still don't know what's going on with Lisa Kudrow's character. She plays Maggie Naird.
That's why I'll keep watching. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like she's in jail. We don't know why. There are some gems in here, like seeing the late Fred Willard, who plays Naird's dad.
Yep.
And then there are some moments, but as a whole product, it's not hitting the mark yet for me. So I'm going to give it probably one or two more. I'll get caught up with you. I'll at least get to episode four and see how it goes from there. Eric, it was a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sounds good. Take
and we wish you all the
all
best.
Right, you too. Thank you.
At
PopLife is a product
at the AIA
Syracuse
and,
Public
hopefully
Media. Thanks to
we
our
can
donors
come back and talk
our
about
business
this thing
sponsors.
At the end of the season.
Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee.
Please subscribe if you haven't done so, and be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like the 315. Until the next time, have yourselves a fantastic week.